Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. This is great. Every time I come in here, I got more notes on my board to talk about, so that's good. We're going to kind of piggyback probably the previous episode talking about financing, firm financial arrangements, the importance of financing to be consumer driven. Today, we're going to go more into the in-office payment plan side. This is kind of like the dark area. And what I mean by that is that unless you've proven that third-party financing is working for your practice, this is an area you have to tread lightly. And I'm cautious in giving people advice because on this area specifically, because I don't know, you know, what systems you have in place and the potential cash flow ramifications that we will share that happens because of this, both positively and negatively. But I will tell you that we wouldn't be where we are without in-office financing, and I wouldn't be doing what I was doing without in-office financing. So it is kind of a must long-term, I think, you know, if you really want to win from that standpoint. Hey, I talked about it last time. Our mastermind program kicks off this July. I think it's our flagship program at 3D Dentists. We really dive into all the fundamentals of what makes a practice successful. And you hear it from both T-Bone and I, who I think we run pretty successful businesses. And but we do it in day in and day out basis, you know, with multiple doctors. And so I think our workflow is scalable and really good. So, hey, if you're interested in that, check us out, 3D-dentist.com. That's your sales pitch. Because I sponsor my own podcast, so I get to sales pitch you whatever I want. Anyways, okay, Aubrey's back. Welcome back, Aubrey.
Thank you. Round two.
Round two. Okay, so we're gonna jump into this. Obviously, one of the statistics that I said I want you to look at is what percentage of your collections was financed in 2022. I think a healthy number is going to be between 10 and 20%. Overachieving number is going to be, you know, upwards of that. So looking and obviously, so we were overachievers last year. You just
created that scale.
I created that scale knowing my numbers to make me an overachiever. But no, we did 25%. And it sounds so funny because a lot of people would be like, well, wait a second, that's not good. You're telling me that 25% of your collections was financed? Like that's not, that seems like a non-healthy number. But I love that number. So last year we did 25% of our collections was financed either by a third party or in office. And you said of our 25%,
it was about even, like half and half.
About half of it was third party and about half of it was in-house.
Yeah.
So let's kind of jump into this. And I'm going to make the assumption that you're bought in after last episode, that you want to do financing for your patients, that you see the need for enrolling more dentistry, lowering your AR, and you want to not only do those things, but now you want to figure out how to go beyond just third-party financing. Because what I would say is, you know, half of ours was in office, and it's hard for me to say, maybe you could comment on this, Aubrey, but my assumption would be that if we didn't offer in office, probably less than half of that in-house would have been financed through third party, meaning it wouldn't have been done.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assumption. Because I think a lot of times people see the third party option, but then they're like, wait a second, this is an in-house option. And it almost, they redirect themselves to that.
Yeah, and for a couple of reasons, right? Like I take myself as an example. If you give me the option to finance something at 0% interest, because that's what all of our in-office stuff is, by the way. We don't believe in doing it. You get into kind of like different rules and laws, unless you're using someone like Compassionate Finance, that's another topic for another day. But so you're doing these at no interest. So for myself, if I had the option to do, let's say, go ahead and get the Invisalign done and the two veneers, and it's going to cost me an extra $2,000 and I had to pay that out of pocket, I may not feel comfortable committing to all that. Or let's say I want to do 8 anterior crowns, but I could benefit from crown lengthening, like aesthetic crown lengthening, and it's going to add another $3,000. Maybe I don't do that. But if I get the option for an in-office payment plan, so now with no interest in 12 months, my monthly payment goes from a, $250 to $325 to get that initial dentistry done. Now I'm in.
Yeah. Cause then it's a very relative number. It's on a smaller scale too. So people can much easier wrap their mind around doing the dentistry versus that big number initially.
So naturally people are going to shy away from third party financing if they have the option to not do it because of the interest rates potentially, but because of the credit score hit. Like, I'm not going to do it specifically for that. Mm-hmm. But if you gave me in-office payment plans at any place, I would finance everything all day long.
Yeah. And like, a lot of people wonder if there's like a catch too when they see that.
Yeah, because they're like, wait a second, you're going to... And that's the scary part, right, is you're now being the bank. And so because of that, we've got rules. And that really is the part that's so important. And someone texted me last week when we were talking about this in one of our mastermind groups, and they say, so do you just do in-house when they don't get approved for third party?
No.
Absolutely not, yeah, right?
Gosh, no.
I mean, that would be the worst candidate that we probably would want to use for in-office. So talk about kind of like how people choose, what our rules are, kind of go into the nitty-gritty of what in-office payment plans look like.
Yeah. So the in-office payment plan option, obviously you can always prepay in full. That's top on the list. We never skip over that part because if they want to pay,
there's no prepayment penalty.
Yeah. No prepayment penalty. And that's the same for any of the financing options. Cause sometimes there are, for third party financing too. But the in-house options, we have 3, 6, or 12 months. And in our spreadsheet, we've got kind of, definitions based on the cost of the total of the treatment.
So give us an example.
So if it's a $10,000 treatment option, it's going to give the 12-month payment option. It's not necessarily going to give the 3-month payment option. And it would generate the third-party payment options as well.
And why is it not going to generate the 3-month payment
because option? Because it's going to be a really large monthly payment. There are situations where patients... What I always find interesting is when you start to watch the patient rationalize like what makes sense for them based on the down payment and monthly payment. Sometimes they'll be like, well, it's nice that you guys offer, a chance to split up this cost. And I know the 3-month isn't listed here, but what if I did? And obviously we would say, well, sure, we would. We just try to make it, the spreadsheet spits out the numbers to where it's a affordable monthly payment.
Correct. And so someone asking that question is probably a good person. I mean, like that's a good qualified person. If they're like, basically, can I prepay this early is what they're asking. I just don't want to pay it all today.
Yeah.
Now, but the reason we have basically two big rules. Rule number one is every in-office payment plan has a down payment. Mm-hmm. And that down payment is
20% if it's for 3 months, or for 6 and 12 months, it's 35%.
So the longer we finance out, the more down payment you have to have, right? Because there's more risk. So if you're going to go 12 months out, that's more risk for me. So I want more down. So we're getting 35% down.
And 50 sometimes. Yeah.
And even, I mean, so that's a really important part of this is it's not just like free reign. It's built into our spreadsheet. The spreadsheet's locked. So it's not like I can have different treatment coordinators going down there and, moving things around. So rule number one is you have to have a down payment. Now, we live in an insurance world and a PPO environment. So the reality is I'm getting my 35% down from the patient portion and I'm getting
the insurance
money as well. So by that point, I'm almost already typically going to be at somewhere around the 40 to 50%, paid down by the time I've done treatment. So again, your risk is really mitigated there from at least your hard cost standpoint.
And really, I mean, for like the implants, it's okay because that's
an 8-month process typically.
Procedure.
Orthos typically 6 to 12 months. Mm-hmm.
So it's just your restorative cases that you're a little bit more concerned, but even there, the costs are a little bit less. So it's not as much.
Not all CEREC offices are CEREC. So okay, their lab bills are significantly more.
But you're still getting that initially down.
Correct. So
and then for the monthly payment that we set up to follow, we try to. A lot of times if the schedule's full for the next couple weeks, that first payment's already coming out too, sometimes before.
Right. Ideally, you're booking out 30 days, so you're getting the first payment as well coming in. So those are some ways we mitigate it. That's rule number one. Rule number two is that we don't want the payments. There's going to be a couple rules now that I think about it. But the second thing to think about is, yes, I don't want my monthly payment to be unrealistic. And so what do we consider an unrealistic monthly payment?
If it's over like $500.
So if it's over $500, we're typically going to be weeding people out of the spreadsheet because we know that it's unrealistic that someone may may be able to pay $1,000 a month for 12 months. Mm-hmm. Like that starts to become a little bit of a, now that doesn't mean that we don't have some level of, again,
wiggle room.
But if we see that that's the case, then that's probably going to trend us more towards third party. Because I mean, what do you find is the monthly payment that people makes people buy? I'm curious.
I would say 300 to 400 is a sweet spot. And a lot of times people go towards the third party when they see that a down payment isn't required.
And I'm doing math because our average treatment plan in office finance is 7,000. And if I divide that by 12, that's 580 with it. Well, if you say $2,000 down payment, that puts me at 416. So yeah, I mean, that would basically make total sense there. So that kind of gives you some insight there that you've got to get that monthly payment down to somewhere between $300 and $500, because that's where we would know people are going to buy. So if we can't get it done within that timeline, that's going to typically push people then to third party financing. Now when you're the bank, the thing you have to look at is kind of twofold. How much money are you going to top end let out at one time? And then how much money are you going to allocate per person? Because what I mean by that is, like, let's say that you're a bank and you've got $10,000 to give away or to finance for patients. Would you rather give away that to one patient or for $10,000 or 10 patients for $1,000? I'm asking you, Aubrey, Bank of Aubrey.
10 patients for $1,000.
Yeah. The reason being because it lowers your risk, because if one of those patients defaults, it's not the end of the world versus if your main patient defaults. So that's part of the thing is we have to limit the amount we give to each patient so that we're minimizing our risk. So currently, just to give you an example, and like, again, you have to kind of scale these numbers down because we are a 4-doctor larger practice and we've been doing this for 5 years, but we have 240 patients that are currently being financed by the Sullivan Bank Daley Sullivan. Yeah. 240 people. And the average treatment plan is $7,000. So that means Bank of Sullivan has loaned out essentially $1.8 million, which is a little scary, a lot of scary. And I would tell you that's probably too high end of a number, but the shit just keeps working. So my mentality is pour gasoline on the fire, right? So we're $1.8 million. Now, how much? I have a couple questions. Well, the spoiler to that $1.8 million, before you all lose it, is that of the $1.8 million, how much is defaulted?
$7,000.
So of that $1.8 million, over half's already been paid up. And the part that's not on time is $7,000.
A percent, if that. It's
and,
not even.
And how many patients is that coming from?
Probably 10.
So that kind of tells you the default rate. And so would you rather have already collected 800 grand or $1 million and only have 800 grand to collect, and you lost $7,000 to get that $1.8 million in production closed? I mean, that to me is like the biggest no brainer ever. So that's why I just keep doing it. Now we've got, again, good systems in place to where we're monitoring it. But then the question I have to ask you is of that amount of dentistry, how much of that would not have been done if it wasn't offered as an in-office payment plan? Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think it's over half.
Yeah, $7,000, if that's the average cost, that's a big chunk of money to people.
And so then, or maybe it's a third.
Yeah.
And so then if you look at that and you say, oh my gosh, like that's how we routinely do more comprehensive dentistry than most, is because it's just more affordable. Because that's essentially saying for those 240 patients, the average treatment plan is $7,000. And so then we have to look at this and say, this is why Tio and I harp all the time that we don't have a freaking case acceptance problem, because the bigger challenge here is what I hope this is making you open your eyes to is how many patients are you routinely presenting $7,000 in dentistry on? And so how many patients are you truly comprehensively looking at the patient and giving them the option to say yes to the best, whether that's aesthetic work, functional dentistry, sleep, soft tissue work, wisdom teeth, oral surgery, like whatever the dentistry is, is your problem that you don't have the financial arrangement? Because I think what this conversation really should show you is not that you need financial arrangements. It's that you need to diagnose more comprehensively to need the financial arrangements.
But they kind of go hand in hand, because
it's a chicken or the egg.
A lot of doctors too, I think, are nervous getting into that comprehensive conversation because
they're afraid of being shut down.
Yeah. And so if you know that you have that in your tool belt of having the payment options to then follow up that conversation with, I think that eases the blow for the doctors first starting out with presenting the big
dentists,
cases.
Dentists are notorious about hedging their treatment plans. Like it sucks because I'm going to one profile you is what's going to happen. And then I'm going to judge your wallet. And then I'm going to then give you my treatment plan based off my perception of what you potentially could afford.
Or you're like, they've been coming for 20 years. I know the history.
I don't want to overwhelm them. I don't want to scare them off. And so like, so what, like I look at this as like a giant funnel. Okay. And that no one needs financial arrangements until they convince someone that doing unaffordable dentistry is warranted. And once you convince them that it's warranted, then they're going to say, well, I can't afford it. That's the best question ever because that's a buying question, right? Like me asking how much, how I can pay for it, all these options is I want to do the dentistry. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't need financial arrangements or if you don't have an AR issue or you don't have this kind of thing in place, I would argue that the true problem is you're not presenting enough dentistry. And then if it's not, or you're not communicating it effectively enough, meaning you're telling patients no, or they're leaving, or you're overwhelming them. And or the other part of this is, I mean this respectfully, you don't have a advanced enough skill set to either see the amount of dentistry that's there to be seen, because I don't have some unique patient base outside of the fact that we do market for larger cases, you know, or you don't have the skill set to potentially do that type of dentistry. Implants, full arch cosmetics, full arch restorative, periodontal surgery, some of this stuff. And so if basic restorative is all you do, then really the extent of what you'll need to finance out is going to be somewhere below $15,000, because that's typically what a large restorative case would be when you talk about some cosmetics, veneers, something of that nature. Mm-hmm. So that's my soapbox, a little bit of like, if this isn't a problem, we've got to go back and then create the problem. And then to Aubrey's point, is what the problem will create is all these patients that now can't afford the dentistry. And that's where we now have to start to put different ways into practice to make things affordable.
100%. So, and that's where just knowing kind of what direction you're going and having, again, going back to the four pillars, you know, of what we talk about at 3D Dentists all the time, it's just the four things that you have to fine tune as you work through. Yeah. As you work through each step, because when you've got the diagnosis and communication in place, then you've got to have the financial arrangements and tools to help with that. And then a schedule available for it too.
Like what this makes me so, because you know, half the time I don't necessarily see all these numbers or dive into them unless I'm doing something like this. And that's kind of how this came up, was someone said like, well, what's your average, you know, treatment, like average case finance. And to me, the $7,000 number is awesome, because that, what that tells me is that's like, well, shoot, that's like the average treatment plan basically. And frankly, it's probably 9,000 or 8,000, because we're not counting the insurance into that equation, because that's not getting financed. And so, you know, that means that our average, that's a big average treatment plan. Let me kind of pause there. It's a big average treatment plan, but it's not. And what I mean by that is, how can we get to $7,000? Like, give me some examples in our office.
More larger cases.
No, give me specific examples. What
hybrids?
No, that's $7,000, not big.
Well, if big numbers,
just
raise,
give me the $7,000.
Invisalign.
Right. And that's Invisalign and one crown.
Yep.
That's
implants, two implants.
That's two implants. That's an implant and a crown. That's two crowns and two fillings. So all of you out there who are like, well, Sally, we don't market to these big cases. We don't do all in fours. You don't do that. Like, that's BS. Like that's my point is you're not routinely closing that kind of dentistry, and the dentistry, that's not that much.
I mean, even quadrant dentistry.
Dentistry, right. Yeah. And so like that's what kills me. And part of it's my own fault, because what I post on Instagram or what I share is like the dentistry that I do, which are some of these bigger cases. But what truly moves the needle is just going from single tooth dentistry to quadrant dentistry. From quadrant dentistry to multiple quadrant dentistry to arch dentistry, and from arch dentistry to the NUP. And so that's what these kind of financial arrangements do, is it's moving the needle to where we now can see fewer well-planned visits, which slows us down, lets us work in our businesses, and that's where all the growth
minimizes
starts to happen.
Chaos.
Yes, yeah. All those things. Talk about the reporting that you look at, because obviously, like, I mean, that is a lot of money to have out or to be managing from that standpoint. How do you keep track of that? What do we do on a month-to-month basis? Talk to us logistically about how this works.
Yeah, I think this goes back to our reporting podcast we did, you know, a few months ago. But I think every month I have a series of reports that I run, and it's so cool to, you know, gauge the numbers, but you have to really dive into it to see where you're at in the, you know, sequence of the year. And so I think the payment plan report is a big one because it lets us see what our total payment plan, what the total amount we have in our financing. But the number I like to look at more is the third party to in-house ratio. And it's always neat how it stays pretty balanced because our treatment coordinators are so good at kind of catering the options to the patient. Like there's never a big swing of like one direction.
Well, and I'm going to talk about that after you finish this up, because I want to talk about cash flow.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I think we have a good pulse too on like when we feel like we're starting to, when we want more, you know, cash on hand, we'll kind of push the third party a little bit more because we know that that's something that we're wanting to go towards. But every month I run the payment plan report.
When do we do payment plans? Like, do we do them? Is it just carte blanche? You can do it whenever day you want, or?
So we have two kinds of payment plans in our office. One is for the membership plan, and that comes out on the first of every month. And then all of our in-house financing comes out on the 15th of the month. I found that made it the easiest for the team to know that the monthly payment is always on the 15th. And then also for running reports and posting the payments, it's one day a month.
And then
versus it being all month long.
Is this like, we've got a bunch, tell me it's not that we have a bunch of credit cards. I know it's not, but we don't have a bunch of credit cards written down in somewhere. Like how does that work?
So our payment system or software, we use Apex Payment Solutions, but all the cards are stored securely online. So they automatically post or withdraw. And then we do have to, you know, with Open Dental, we do still manually post them in there, but, that way it's just a one day thing, 2 days of the month.
So they automatically, and then how often, like the common questions you're going to get are like, what if someone changes their credit card, or what if it defaults? Like talk about how we work through those things.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got 320 people on our membership plan, 240 in payment plan. So that's 600 payments that you're posting a month roughly. And of those, I would say there's, you know, 15 people that they may have to call, you know, on a month to month basis. But again, when you're thinking proportionally, that's not a big deal. Yeah. It's not a big deal. So really it's very rare, whether it's the card, and we always call patients and say, hey, I think your card may have expired. We just need to get an updated one on file. And a lot of times what's nice is patients will be like, oh, can I just pay that off? And that way I don't have to worry about it anymore. And
yeah, it's just, absolutely. Sure, yeah. Please prepay that.
But yeah, it's minuscule in the grand scheme of things with the amount of patients that you're having to call. And so we just call to follow up. If they don't answer, we leave a message, and then we have our follow-up system for, 2 days and 2 weeks to touch base with them again, just to make sure that we are getting those payments processed. And then obviously if they're mid-treatment, the patients know, okay, we're not going to move forward now until we've gotten you back on track with your payment plan.
Okay, cool. That all makes sense. And I think those are good ways to kind of mitigate it. Okay, so that kind of wraps up the reporting conversation a little bit, just to kind of give you some idea of what we're trying to do to minimize the reality that a patient could default on us. And look, part of that just goes to the conversations that you have with the patient, right? Like you feel like you get vibes sometimes, or that maybe the questions that they ask, or talk about that.
Normally it's, oh, well, I mean, I wasn't prepared to make a down payment today. I don't know why I immediately go into an accent.
You're Southern people here, but apparently don't have money.
So if they start to give any resistance about the down payment, or, well, I don't know if I've got the best credit, you know, when you start talking about financing, that's a lot of times what they'll lead with.
Yeah. Like if they don't have good credit, like that should be a red flag that like they have had issues in the past.
Yeah. So and that's why it's nice to have multiple options for third parties, but that's obviously immediately where I'm going to lean to when we know that credit's an issue.
And like, again, that's where the rules come into play, because if you can't afford the down payment, like the 35% down payment, then we're not going to just go out on a limb and do all of it. So we've built all this into play to where we would minimize those issues or that stuff working. So I think that's important. Now, one thing I do want to talk about is cash flow and the cash flow issue that can arise as it pertains to this type of work by using third-party payment plans. You know, part of it, like the reporting obviously is important to track, because we don't want to lose. We're trying to minimize the fact that someone could default on us. That's obviously, that's critical here. The rules are going to help that a lot which is important from a standpoint of not letting, you know, and like you, like, I think you mentioned it a little bit, but you know, you read people too, right? From a standpoint of like, tell me what would be something they'd say that you'd be like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. If they start to express hesitancy about their credit score, if they are going to need help from like a family member, if they don't have a down payment saved up.
And they have a history of defaults, like they're telling you how they lost all, like,
yeah.
Like those are patients we're obviously going to be hesitant on. So you have to kind of naturally screen them to kind of say, okay, like, is this someone that we want to be the bank for? That's naturally going to happen. But the rules really is what should mitigate this. And that's why we have the higher down payments. Because if you don't qualify for that, we're not going to just like, we're not going to be $100 a month for eternity. That's not realistic or smart business. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've respected the rules. And that's why we've been able to, you know, accumulate to the point that we have now. So this gets into a conversation about cash flow that I want to bring up. So there's some pros to cons to having in-office payment plans. The downside is that when, like, and I think it's funny because you'd be shocked, Aubrey, but so many people listening to this, their hesitancy about third-party financing is because of the 10 to 15% that they're going to take, the fees associated with it, which is crazy to me because we're talking about, you know, getting $10,000 worth of dentistry done. And yes, that cost you $1,500, but the dentistry wouldn't have been done without it. So like, it makes no sense to me why that's the case, but I understand that is something that people start to think about.
Also, that's a thought for CareCredit. Because if it's a smaller amount, then I get why the fee is kind of annoying to have to deal with. But when you're scaling it to larger amounts.
Yeah, but like at the end of the day, if the dentistry wouldn't be done without the financing.
Yep.
Like.
Yeah.
And you can't predictably judge when someone doesn't or doesn't need it. That's the whole logic about like, well, I'm only going to offer it to people that need it. And I know that there's a ton of you out there listening to this. They're like, yep, that's me. I only offer financing to the people who ask for it. Where we make it unaffordable. It's like, well, that there's your problem right there is you're missing this huge window of people. Yes. Yes. I'm sure I finance people that don't need it, that could pay cash. Mm-hmm. And I finance people that definitely need it, but there's a huge group in here that needs it that wouldn't necessarily bring it up. So anyways, we're beating a dead horse there.
Oh, by the way, too, the people that make comments about, oh, well, if you offer financing, why would I not do that? And they start to lean that way, but you know that they can pay, just say, well, we do offer a cash discount if you pay in full too. And then they swing back that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's ways to kind of,
room.
Yeah, and all that stuff. But so, okay. So now from a cash flow standpoint, the best part about third-party financing is you get your cash now. I can't stress that enough. Historically speaking, I will always give you 10% down, 10% away if I can get my money today, because then I can allow that money to start working for me. I can invest it back in my business. And so if you give me the option of getting my money over 12 months or giving it to all today, most people are going to say, give me the money today. Now, there may be times within your practice or in your growth phase that you decide one way or the other. So let me give you examples. When we were building the new practice, and we were kind of obviously going from a smaller space to a bigger space, we had a significant amount of, you know, expenses. Capital expenses to grow into the space. Now, a lot of that was done with loans through equipment, but then a lot of that stuff's just like TVs and computers that isn't necessarily financed in those loans. So for Dad and I, cash was so important. And so we actually went through a period, I don't know if you remember, where we literally, I went down to Aubrey and I was like, hey, no more payment plans, like pause all of them. It's third-party financing only because I got to give away that money, that 10%, because I need the cash now because of the cash flow, the reinvestment that we're doing within the practice. You know, you fast forward 2 years, we're now in the practice. Things have kind of come around to where we're at a point where things are cash flowing well. And so I go down, you know, now I say, hey, Aubrey, we're going to continue to kind of push the in-office payment plans because I want to get that 10% back. Because now I'm willing to take more money over the long haul, given the fact that I don't need the cash flow today necessarily for whatever it is I'm doing. That's also a lot of personal kind of like just whatever you feel. What I won't argue with is that the need for financing, how you do it is kind of somewhat up to you. I think there's a little bit of both, and that's what we find is we see that about 50% of ours is third party, and another 50% of ours is in office financing.
Yeah, I think it would be hard to say to pick one because it is such a...
But if you have to pick one, you always pick a third-party financing because it mitigates your risk. And yeah, so that's why you should start there. Now, things that you'll notice. Well, your in-office payment plans are going to take a lifetime of the payment plan to get your cash flow to settle down. And what I mean by that is if you've got everybody on 12-month payment plans, it's going to take a 12-month cycle before you start to see that feeling of the cash flow go away, because at that point you're no longer adding plans to it as much. You're going to kind of hit a point where you reach the max, that kind of just the capacity of which your business will support payment plan wise based off the people that are there. Is that fair?
Yeah, because you'll see a dip in collections initially and kind of panic when your production's a little bit higher, but then everything starts to balance out once it's
right, because
through.
Once the 12-month cycle's through, and even longer than that, once you, like, we notice, like, we have 240 patients on our payment plans. The reality is next year we're not going to be at like 500, meaning there's a percentage of your patient base that needs the dentistry that would benefit from this and is going to take advantage of it. And so you're going to find that sweet spot of the size of your practice, what you do, and you're going to hit that number. So it's not like it should be this like roller coaster effect of number, especially if you're offering it to all patients. Now, the huge positive in the cash flow is once you get to that point, now you just have essentially passive income coming in. So I'll use us as an example. Again, we're a larger practice. We have a number of people on a membership plan and the in-office financing. But in March, we got $100,000 that just hit the bank account with no dentistry being done. Meaning that some of that, how much was that with membership plan?
$14,086.
So $14,000 hit on the first, and then $86,000 hit on the 15th, whether we showed up or not. So to me, that's pretty cool as a business owner, is now it's the opposite. My collections could look higher, my production could be lower because of that cash flow cycle finally getting into a standpoint of like we're seeing the benefits of the what hurt us 12 months ago, where we didn't see the money coming in, now coming in. So I love that as a business owner now to know that, hey, going into April, I can expect essentially probably the same thing. We may have some people going off payment plans. We have some enrolling on. And so we're now at a point where we're going to continue to see that kind of passive money just rolling in, whether I show up or not. So to me, that's a really big benefit to once you kind of go through that cycle of a lifetime of patients, but you do have to understand and appreciate that it will take that life cycle to do it. So if your max term is 6 months, it's going to take about 6 months. If your max term's a year, take about a year. And then we don't recommend anybody really go beyond a year in that standpoint. That's where we're going to advocate using third-party financing.
Yeah. We go but beyond for 18 months with Invisalign just to get the payments down a little bit, but that's the only thing.
Sure. Really. That's something that we typically can, we've got a good hand on that. System. And we did that so we could raise our fees, to where we could get a better monthly number for the patient, but a better top end number for us relative to the fees that incur with Invisalign and such.
I think what's nice too is you just find what works. Like once you start playing around with it, you find what works with your practice, what your team feels comfortable with. We've changed our financial menu, several times since we first started this, but now we've definitely found that like the 20%, 35%, 50% are good down payment, amounts. And then finding the sweet spot of like what you want your payments, monthly payments to be around is good too.
What you can't do is go off of, well, I tried in office financing and I got burned. Like that's BS, because most likely you didn't have rules and you're going off of an N of like 4 or 5 patients, meaning that you didn't try it. You only let your bank do work with 3 or 4 people, and you did it for the people that didn't get finance approved for other financing. Mm-hmm. Like that's how people typically start. That's like the worst. That's the worst way to do it.
Yeah.
And so if you're truly going to do it, set a top end number, meaning Sullivan Dental Partners is only going to let out 20 grand at a time, and then decide how many patients that's going to be. Let's call it 20 patients. So the max you'll loan out is $1,000 per patient, and the max patients will do are $20,000 until that gets paid down, then we can bring in more. That's how you test the waters of this and to make sure that it works and will work in, because I don't know your area. I don't know your patient base. I suspect, and I have a pretty good, through our mastermind program, a pretty good idea of lots of demographic areas, and this works in all of them. But I do want you to, cautiously encourage you to dip your toe into this water, because I do believe that you can't move to fewer well-planned visits and doing more comprehensive dentistry with the dentistry you love without being more affordable for your patients. And the only way to do that is going to be through some sort of, you know, financing options. So I hope this was all helpful. That kind of tidies up this episode as well. I'm sure that there will be questions. You know, if you want to shoot your questions over, send them to me, millennialdentist@gmail.com. That's two L's and two N's. I'd be happy to compile those questions, and then Aubrey and I can do a, you know, more of a follow-up episode as it pertains to those questions that you have on financial menus. This is, again, stuff that we go over in lots of details, either with our 3D Dentist Bootcamp and our mastermind program that we offer through 3D Dentist. So check those out. Otherwise, I hope you have a great rest of your day. Work smarter, not harder. And we will see you next time on the Millennial Dentist Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.